Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslofsky. I'm feeling multiple reasons to get excited and to be grateful right now, which you'll understand in a moment. So how about you? How's your excitement and gratitude level? This is episode number 26. Hey, friends. I'm so grateful you're listening to this episode, and I'm excited to share all the multiple goodness with you from my guest in a moment. But first, as always, a word from your host. That would be me. So I just got back from 4.5 days in Portland, Oregon, and the World Domination Summit. And I tell you what, holy smokes. I mean, holy freaking, oh my goodness, you gotta be freaking kidding me smokes. The city, the speakers, the food, the people, I mean, the people, you know, all those awesome guests that I've had on the show so far and the ones that I've recorded unpublished episodes with, I'm talking people like Ethan Waldman, Courtney Carver, Joshua Becker, Colin Wright, Scott Dinsmore, James Clear, Todd Tressiter, Dan and Vanessa Hayes, Charlie Gilkey, Natalie Sisson, and too many other people to name. You know all those folks? I met them all in Portland for the World Domination Summit, known best by its acronym WDS. I shared stories, struggles, triumphs with folks like Ethan and Dan over breakfast at this really good New Orleans-style restaurant. I bumped into my buddy Rami outside the main venue, which then led to saying hey to Charlie Gilkey, which then led to more people heading to an amazing Lebanese place for dinner and a tremendous amount of laughs. I met a woman named Asia, who almost single-handedly repelled some super shady land developers who were looking to evict people from the place where she lived. I would talk about inspiring, and that doesn't even bring into account the folks like Jennifer, who I met in line to get in the main event venue one day. And we shared tips about public speaking, curating, and spreadsheets. I mean, folks, I've rarely met someone more geeked up about spreadsheets than me, but Jennifer was an enthusiast among enthusiasts, not to mention funny and sincere. We may have been separated at birth. I'm going to double check on that one. And guess what else? Like, that's not enough. I even had one conversation with a couple of prominent people that may grow into one of the greatest collaborations I will ever be a part of. And I am really excited. I hope you'll stay tuned for more on that one as the weeks and months go by. But right now, so many of the people I met at WDS have turned into listeners of Smart and Simple Matters already. And I can't tell you how grateful and tickled I am about that fact. If you're a new friend from WDS and you're listening to this, thank you. I mean, seriously, thank you very much. It means a ton to me. If you're a longtime listener and you're just waiting for the chance for the two of us to connect in person, I hope that happens for us soon. I would really love to meet everybody who listens to the show. Magic can happen, though, when the right kind of people meet in the right kind of place with the best of intentions and little expectations for what might happen. And I mean, I could go on and on. Seriously, I mean, I could do a whole episode about the lessons I learned from WDS and the people I shared experiences with. But then you wouldn't get to hear from one very special woman I met in person for the first time at WDS. Her name is Emily Wapnick, and I am delighted that she is my guest for this episode. Let me start this off by asking you some serious questions with my new microphone. Hope you like it. Still different from the one I used to record the episode with Emily. So here goes. Do you want to know how to build your confidence toolbox? Perhaps you would like to simplify your goal setting and goal achieving ways, or maybe combine the things you love into an income generating dynamo. Sound pretty groovy? Maybe you're down for stories about what it's like to be a leader of the weirdos and dorks. I can resonate with that. What happens when you try to specialize and you are so not a specialist? Again, totally me. Why you should set a launch date for any personal or professional project? These are all great questions. And if that's not enough, maybe you're ready to handle the tale of how Value of Simple was originally going to be named something else and almost was named something else very, very different. Get ready for a good one, my friend. Settle in with your cup of coffee or tea. Strap on your shoes for a run. Get in your zone of simplicity while you drive around town. Wherever you are, now it's time for the main event. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Smart and Simple Matters Show, everyone. I have a guest for you today that defies traditional labels like Star Trek defies the laws of physics. So how do I introduce this groovy woman, calling attention to her awesomeness, but not putting her into a container that's too small for her ever-expanding toolkit and internet playground? How about this? My guest is Emily Wapnick from PuttyLike.com, The Putty Tribe, Putty Labs, and many other putty-related places and things. When she's not impressing people with her multi-potentialite talents, and you'll understand the meaning and power of the multi-potentialite in a moment, she can be found hanging around paleo food carts in Portland, Oregon, having a good time with her miniature schnauzer named Grendel, and concocting more collaborative coolness with many people who love to join forces with her in creating something meaningful. And I gotta tell you, for being a relatively recent entrepreneur, Emily has been featured in some pretty dang high-profile places like Lifehacker and the Financial Times, has enjoyed better and faster business success than a lot of her peers. But not just in the ability to earn an income. A lot of that, at least in my experience, has to do with Emily's ability to speak and define in the language of the people in her growing community, to listen to what they want and need, and then quickly create those things. And she makes everybody happy in the process. So her primo online community called The Putty Tribe, which opens its doors to new members every month, is an example of that awesomeness, and so is her book slash guide called Renaissance Business. Now I'm gonna let Emily tell you more about herself and all the rad things she's up to in a moment. But with all that said, welcome to the show, Emily. I'm jazzed to have you on today.
Wow. Thanks, Joel. I don't even know what to say. That was something.
Good.
Thank you.
Hey, I'll just take a big smile, and that's good enough for me. So I want to start by taking people back. You know, before we get into some of the current stuff, you've got a pretty cool history and a pretty cool story to share with people. So maybe you can take us back and describe what I like to call the seeds of awesomeness, some of the foundational things that make you the person that you are today. Would you mind telling everybody maybe one to two experiences that you had growing up, or maybe even something about your environment as a child that's really shaped who you are today?
Yeah, I thought about this question, and I feel like it probably has a lot to do with the fact that I have two professor parents. So there was never this, like, you know, this expectation that I would be headed towards. I mean, there was an expectation that I would eventually, like, you know, support myself, but we weren't very career minded. I think it was just sort of like, you can study whatever you want and it's all okay because, you know, dot, 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 because it all leads to academia. It was sort of, you know, what was going on there. But, you know, whether or not I ended up being a professor, which I haven't yet, who knows what'll happen, right? But it meant that I grew up in an environment where I was allowed to explore and to kind of just dabble in many different disciplines and jump around between areas. And that was all okay. It was all encouraged. And it was never, I didn't really think that there was anything wrong with this until I started interacting with the world outside of my family. But I got a really nice early start there. So I think that that had a big impact on my multi-potentialite ways now. You think what else? I was also, you know, it's funny. I was kind of a big nerd growing up. I still am, but I wasn't the most popular kid at all. And but I realized that I was a bit of a leader of the weirdos. Like, I was kind of like a leader among weirdos. So, you know, I had like my little group of dorks, and I was always kind of jumping into various projects and leading, you know, like gymnastic shows in the park and, like, I don't know, fortune telling businesses, like, and like origami shows and, like, you know, like a local news video program or like writing scripts or just like I was always initiating projects among like my little tribe of weirdos. And I feel like that's a lot of what I do today. So I think I got started as a kid.
I had no idea that there was such a thing as an origami show. And I guess one of the nice things is that at least in this day and age, what I find is really cool is I self-identify as a nerd or as a geek. Mm-hmm. You know, I've sort of fit in a little bit growing up, but I know what you mean. And being having the tendencies that you exhibited and still do, and that I do as well, it's now cool to be a little bit geeky and nerdy. Like these are things people can be proud to call themselves, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
you know, as you grow up and you realize that you're a little bit outside the mainstream, and initially you're okay with that. I know that you've since evolved further. Through post-secondary school, you talked about how you aren't a professor yet. I know that you did pursue potentially becoming a lawyer. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about how you went through academia and a specific training and made a transition into what you're now doing with PuttyLike and a number of the other things online?
Sure. Well, I feel like there's a little bit of, I need to fill in the middle a little bit. So, you know, my childhood was great, like, at home and everything, but then at school, you know, the kids didn't really understand why I was like playing violin instead of like, or you know, why I would like have violin rehearsals. They thought I was super weird or whatever. And then as I got older, I started to realize that there was this expectation to specialize. And for a long time, I really tried to fit myself into that box. I, you know, tried to find my thing several times. I thought music was it for a while. In high school, I grew up playing violin, and then I switched to guitar and played in a band for a while, did this kind of singer-songwriter thing for a while, and then lost interest. And then I became interested in film, and I actually studied film production in undergrad. Then, you know, did some short films that got into festivals, and then lost interest in that and became interested in law, and that's how I ended up in law school. Kind of midway through law school, I sort of realized that I didn't want the life of a lawyer. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a lawyer. I know some great lawyers who love what they do, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hours. You can work for yourself, but usually you don't start there. And I really wanted to be self-employed. I was kind of learning about entrepreneurship. And so I decided, I think actually in my third year, my classmates were doing interviews for various law firms, and I was like working on a web series with a friend and like running auditions and stuff, and people were like, what are you doing? So my interest in law started to fade, and I was becoming more and more interested in entrepreneurship and in the idea of starting a business and like lifestyle design and that whole thing. How did I transition to PuttyLike? Like, well, I hired a coach and was met with kind of the same problem that I'd had throughout my whole life. Basically, my coach was like, okay, well, you need a niche. You need a niche for your business. So like, let's try and think of something really specific that you can, you know, write, create like content around.
What was that, by the way? What were you prescribed with your
yeah,
niche?
So he said, oh, you went to law school and your specialty seems to be like it was like intellectual property, because I was really into like Creative Commons and like copyright policy and stuff. And he was like, oh, that's great. You can create a business that's like LegalZoom, but specifically for copyright. Mm. And the idea of doing that just like made me want to kill myself. I was like, oh my God, no, if I wanted to do that, I would just be a lawyer. Like, he just didn't understand me at all. And I think that that's a really common thing. You know, we hear this advice to choose a niche for your business, choose something really, really specific, really narrow. And it just doesn't work with the way that a lot of people are wired. So my idea for PuttyLike actually came from a lot of brainstorming and looking back on my life and making these lists of like different things that I could create a business and a community around, and just not feeling like I wanted to do, like they all sounded great, but just doing one of them, any one of them, sounded awful. I just figured I would get bored eventually, and I didn't want that to happen. And then I was thinking about my life and how I have this pattern of getting really interested in something and then kind of getting bored and then jumping to something else, and how that always caused me a lot of anxiety. Like I did it and my parents were supportive, but other people wouldn't understand. And I always worried that there was like something broken inside of me, like some reason that I couldn't commit and that I would never be happy, or I'd have to like settle with something. And I was like, well, what if I stop beating myself up about this pattern and I start celebrating it and I find a way to make it work, and I embrace it and give it a name. And I don't know, maybe there are other people out there who have this pattern, who've done this zigzag thing that I've done. And that's where the idea for Putty Light came from.
And embrace it, you have. And you do have a name for your thing. I've seen this spread across the internet. And maybe it's because of the circles that I travel in. But, you know, I almost feel obligated to start the meat of our conversation around a single word. And you mentioned it once already. It's this concept of a multi-potentialite. And I remember when I first encountered that word on your Putty Light website. And I thought, well, one, how do I pronounce that? Two, how many tries will it take me to spell that without looking? And three, I think was, whoa, I'm a freaking multi-potentialite, and I must consume all blog posts written by this seemingly genius and non-conventional woman. This multi-potentialite word, I know you said if we go to the terminology page on Putty Light, I'll link to it in the show notes, it's synonymous with other things like scanner or generalist or polymath and even more. So tell us, in your own words, what's a multi-potentialite and how have you used this concept to build a movement around Putty Light?
A multi-potentialite is a person with many interests and creative pursuits in life. That's my definition. Like you said, it comes from the word multipotentiality, which kind of is a term in psychology to refer to people with multiple aptitudes. And it's synonymous with, you know, the Renaissance person, the polymath, and it's just sort of like my updated version of that. Well, I think actually having a name for your people goes a really long way. It's sort of, you want an identity that people want to associate with, want to, you know, use, something that for people who feel like they have never been able to find a label that fits, I think that really appeals to them, because it's sort of this like overarching, it's a label, but it's like really broad because it doesn't say what you're interested in. It just says that you're not interested in one thing. So I think that it really appealed to my people for that reason. And it's also just, I think it's a really cool idea when you can come up with like your tribe's language. You know, I've got little terms like smooshing, which I talk about when I say, you know, smoosh two or more interests together, and the whole putty thing, like sticking putty at the beginning of a word. but yeah, I think creating language, like a name for your people that they want to embrace, and then a language around your tribe, that can be really powerful for kind of bringing people together, and you can recognize someone who's like in your clan because they speak similarly. And then, you know, it's actually, you touched on something which is awesome, but also a little frustrating, which is that often people, like, I think that people get the most out of just hearing that it's okay to be this way. Like, I get so many emails from people that are like, thanks for letting, like, I thought that there was something wrong with me, and now that I know it's okay, I know there are other people who do this. And then, like, I often want to be like, well, I also, like, wrote a whole bunch of articles, and, like, I've got a lot of other stuff that could help, but I feel like that's just, like, the big one. If, when you're told that it's okay, that just, like, does so much.
It's true. I mean, I live a pretty countercultural lifestyle, as anyone who's listened to the show can probably attest, with being in the paleo diet and lifestyle and minimalism and a number of the other somewhat out there things, at least as far as the mainstream goes. So I know what it's like to grab a label, and I know you're a little bit like me too, and you have a love-hate relationship. You know, a label can be liberating. It can also be incredibly constricting in a lot of ways. And you were talking about being able to have your own terminology and your own terms, and you've mentioned the word Renaissance before, which I love talking about Renaissances, because one of the things that I tell people about all the time is I talk about my personal Renaissance. Mm-hmm. You know, but besides us sharing the word Renaissance, you have this book / guide. I'm really not sure how to structure it, because it's both. I mean, it's not just like a book, it's like a resource kit a system to unlock all these various areas in your life. So, and even before that, you had this manifesto. It was called the Undeclared for Life Manifesto. I'm curious, of those two things, the Undeclared for Life Manifesto and Renaissance Business, they help people explore what I like to think of as these dormant parts of them, and they're just waiting for somebody or for something to give them permission to come out and play. Did you write those because you felt like other people needed to experience what you had to find out in a rough way yourself?
Definitely. Yeah. With Renaissance Business in particular, because like I said, I mean, I was consuming all of these resources that were saying, oh, you want to start a web-based business? Well, you have to choose a really specific niche. So do that, and then we can talk, you know, like then we can move on. And I wanted people to like have something that spoke in their language, you know, something that wasn't like you don't need to choose one thing. You can find a cohesive theme that brings together multiple subjects. You can have a business that allows you to explore many different topics. So definitely, yeah.
Well, it's kind of overwhelming in some ways to be this multi-interested, multi-passionate, multi-lots of things person, because I'm somebody who does pretty well with resisting and pushing back on the forces of overwhelm as they're silently lurking in the corner. But a lot of people who are scanners, they can get overwhelmed really easily. And for the people who listen to the show, whether they identify as minimalist or simplicity seeker, that's a very real threat to their mental state and their emotional state. So would you even say you have a system? Like, does Renaissance Business give people a system where they can feel liberated and less overwhelmed at the same time?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when you're a multi-potentialite, it's wonderful. You know, you get to experience so much of the world and you get to explore so many different things, but there are challenges, absolutely. And one of the big ones is overwhelm and figuring out how you're going to make progress on multiple projects or how you're going to focus on multiple projects and make progress on all of them. And so I definitely write a lot about productivity and fear and overwhelm. Renaissance Business doesn't focus specifically on those things. It focuses on creating a community and a web-based business from multiple topics. So bridging the gap between many different areas and kind of branding yourself so that it makes sense, but yet you're free to play in different areas. But there's definitely a lot of that kind of overwhelm and the fear stuff sprinkled in, because that's really what gets in the way for a lot of people.
I think that
having a system, I really tried to make it simple, simple, simple. Like I really try. The guide is just as long as I think it needs to be, and no longer and not shorter. And it's supposed to take you from, you know, 5 or 6 weeks from coming up with, you know, a list of all of your passions to like launching your business.
Well, how have you dealt with it personally? I know that you've struggled with feeling overwhelmed and overcoming a number of your fears, whether it's with launching your own business or public speaking. Can you give us an example or two of how you've customized your own system to push back against these feelings that we all have, whether it's being overwhelmed or kind of scared about what's new and what's different? Yeah. How do you handle those kinds of things personally?
Well, I'll give you an example. So as you mentioned, public speaking was a big goal of mine. It was something that I was, you know, being the big dork in elementary school and high school and even in college, I never spoke. I never raised my hand. I wasn't a shy kid, but in that context, I was very, very quiet. And I always had this fear, like a lot of people. And I decided, I mean, for one thing, I felt like I had this message that I needed to like step out of that fear and just kind of spread the message further and through different channels and just get up there and do it. And also I wanted to overcome that fear. So the first thing I did was, well, first I kind of like, I was launching the Putty Tribe at the same time as this. And I sort of like piggybacked one goal off of the other. So I like used one, and this is a really cool technique that you can use if you have multiple projects. You use one to kind of help get you ready for the other. So when I was launching the Putty Tribe, I ran these huddles, which were like little, well, we still run them actually. They're hour long group brainstorms. They're kind of like little masterminds. We get together in a Google Hangout and we just talk about our projects and where we're stuck and we help each other out. And that was a way for me to kind of test the waters and to start by just like leading a group before I get up and speak. And so I did that for a while. And then I decided, okay, it's time to get serious. So I actually just booked a date. I was like, all right, September 18th, it was 3 months from, I think I was, it was like June. Was that 3 months? July, August, yeah, 3 months, right? So it was like June 18th. I was like, okay, three months from now, I'm going to put on a seminar and I'm just going to book a room. And I don't care if no one shows up, but like a couple friends, I'm going to videotape it. I'm just going to do it because I don't want to wait for someone else to choose me. I don't want like the excuse of being like, okay, well, that person hasn't responded to my email, so I can just like wait on this or like send out a few more emails. Now I was like, I just need a date to just get some momentum. And I didn't end up booking that day. I ended up booking a day in mid-October. So it was 4 months, but still pretty good. And I actually ended up with a packed room. There was like 30, 35 people there. At PSU in downtown Portland. And it was awesome. It gave me something to work towards. And then after that, some of the people that I had contacted to let them know about my seminar actually emailed me, and I got a speaking gig at a high school. And so I did that. And then I had another contact who put me in touch with another high school, and then I did that. So I'm trying to think about my process. I guess.
Well, you're talking about piggybacking, using one project to leverage and launch or to benefit another project. And it sounds like initially you had Putty Tribe, your online community, and then you leveraged that, the huddles that you were talking about, these Google Hangouts, and being able to have these hour-long jam sessions with all these other awesome people to talk about some of your obstacles and how you might overcome them and how you might pursue some of the things that you can't do alone, that you need support, whether it's moral support or some resources. So it sounded like, to me at least, you're able to combine things, to smoosh things, if you will, as opposed to looking at things independently.
Yep.
You figure out strategically how can you combine one aspect of your life with another and use them in ways that allows you to achieve and be more than you otherwise would if you were just siloed, right?
Absolutely. And it also just allowed me to give it a shot to just try it and see how I liked leading a group. And to do it in kind of a safer way than just getting up on stage. I also joined Toastmasters, which helped a lot once I booked that date. And that, I think, is the other secret. And I encourage people to do this in Renaissance business, too. I say, you know, set a launch date. Set a date that's 5 weeks from now and have it on the calendar. And it gives you something to work towards so that you're not just kind of spinning your wheels or just like working on something with some vague idea that one day we'll be doing something. So I think that can really help to kind of just get you into work mode. And, you know, the overwhelm comes, it always comes. But if you can switch back into that, okay, well, I need to get work done. If you can switch back into that mode, then you can kind of bypass it a lot of times temporarily anyway.
Yeah, I think what you just said is important. And it can be applied in things much different than business. For example, I struggled with getting a workout routine down. I've just broken through over the past 3 months, and twice a week I go down into my basement and for 30 minutes I crank out squats. And the point is, when you pick this launch date, like I have in my mind that I'm going to launch the fact that I'm physically bigger and stronger and feeling a little bit more confident to my friends and to my family. Not that I'm going to go and, you know, flex and do a whole wrestling WWE routine, but by picking a date, and when I chose June, where I would be able to boast a little bit, this is what I've achieved, and this is meaningful, and here's why. This launch date concept applies to personal goals as well, not just the kind of businessy type things. You can absolutely apply them to your personal life or to things that you're doing offline equally as well, if not more powerfully than a lot of things that we're talking about.
The other thing you're doing there is you're using positive accountability. So I call like regular accountability is sort of like, okay, I'm going to make this phone call at 4 o'clock on Tuesday. Hold me, make sure I do it, you know, like check back in with me and be mad at me if I don't do it. But positive accountability is doing something awesome and then going to your friends and being like, guess what I just did? You know, it's kind of like bragging, but like in a positive way, and people being like, oh, that's awesome. And I think that that is really motivating too. being like, ooh, I'll be able to like, you know, go tell people what I accomplished.
Yeah. You know, and that's an excellent segue because one of the reasons I was excited to have you on the show, I wanted to ask you about this. On the about page of PuttyLike, you write, and I'm going to quote for a second here. You say, innovation happens when you take knowledge from one field and use it to solve a problem in a completely unrelated field. To stifle your putty-like nature is a crime, not just in terms of limiting your own potential, but to society as a whole. And as multi-potentialites, we must use our gift to innovate. It's in our genes. And you talk about owing it not just to yourself, but owing it to other people to achieve something awesome, to achieve something amazing. Like you've been granted this gift and you don't want to waste it.
Yeah.
You know, with that in mind, being a scanner also demands spending a lot of time reading, listening, watching, experimenting without actually doing anything, like innovating, at least in the short term. Do you have a tip or two for how someone like you or me can balance this seemingly relentless urge to consume with the joy that we experience when we create the things that we love and that other people find value in?
Mm-hmm. Well, I talk about... So I actually imagine this like big switch in my brain. So on one side, there's my focus time. And then on the other side, there's my scanning time. That's what I call it. And when I'm in focus mode, that's usually when I'm creating something or just focusing on the projects that I'm like actively pursuing, like those 1 to 5 priority projects. And I always have 1 to 5 and I always know what they are. And I usually write them on my, like, you know, I hang them on my wall or I write them on my whiteboard just to remind myself what my main priorities are right now. And other things will cycle in. But then I'll also have scanning time, which is basically free time. And that's when I can dabble in whatever areas, you know, read a bunch, just kind of jump around and not multitask, whatever I want to do, you know, read stuff, consume stuff, connect with people, get on social media. That's sort of how I handle it. And so that ensures that I both get stuff done and also allow myself to explore my, you know, my multi-potentialite passions and curiosities and see what else is out there.
How do you do that, though? How do you build that wall while still ensuring that there's a door that you can open and go back and forth between this world of consumption and the world of creation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got some rituals set up. So my morning time is my work time. And I just, like, I'm really strict about this. If I have to get up and, like, run errands or something, then, like, I'm a wreck for the rest of the day because I missed my morning creative time. So I have a whole morning routine where I like give gratitude and go for a walk and everything. And then I get down to business and it's just like 3 or 4 hours of working on my priority projects. And then in the afternoon, I might do a little bit more of that, but I don't have to. That's my rule for myself. And so that's when I can, you know, I'll either schedule specific scanning time or I'll just have free time and just be easy on myself. And I think a lot of people try to do too much. And then when they don't get everything done, they're really hard on themselves. I actually have a surprisingly low number of things that I like. Usually there's just one main focus per day where I'm like, okay, I just need to accomplish this one thing. And when I do, then cool. And usually I end up doing more than one thing, but that allows me to, I don't know, not hate myself for and always feel unproductive.
I know the feeling, and as a matter of fact, you're talking about rituals. You know, I have a ritual weekly where I review what I did the previous week, and there's certain days where I'm working and it doesn't feel like enough or it doesn't feel good. And then I realize when I have my half an hour, let's break down the previous week and what I did well, that I achieved a lot of really cool things. And being able to integrate those habits, whether it's daily or weekly or monthly, to trigger feelings. You talk about gratitude and how you wake up and one of the first things you do is create a ritual that allows you to experience gratitude for the abundance of life. My words, not yours. And that's really cool. And I would encourage other people who are listening too to explore how they can create their own routine, how they can build their own rituals that are based on simple triggers that allow them to experience the positive feelings, even on the days where it just doesn't seem like it's enough or it's too overwhelming. So that's really cool.
Yeah, those things are kind of like, they're very grounding to just have these rituals that you're like, even if I feel overwhelmed, like, this is what I do. And that really helps.
But let's, you were mentioning resistance and this concept of resistance, which isn't something that I really touch on very frequently, although it's something, well, I'm going to use a bad word here. I intuitively feel this resistance all the time to doing the work, to putting in the time, to working out, and whatever it may happen to be, the things that I know that I should do, or I want to do, or that I even need to do, yet I feel this resistance. How does that manifest itself for you? How do you push back against this nagging feeling of something just always trying to hold you back from what it is that you want to do?
Well, again, rituals, those are huge, because it's like, if it's work time, it's work time. And it's the kind of thing that is cumulative. So if you do your ritual every day, after a while, it becomes, you know, sort of ingrained. And that's a really good way to fight resistance. One thing I feel like I should touch on, because I mentioned it earlier, is the difference between resistance and genuinely getting to the end of a passion. And for me, it feels different in my body. So when I'm like actually done with a project, when I've gotten what I came for, it's sort of like this boredom, but there's no excitement left. You know, if I'm talking about it to someone else, they're just like, you know, you can't hear the excitement in my voice. But if it's resistance, there will be like this dual, both dread and boredom, and also like this excitement and this fear. And it's not this like long lingering thing that builds. It's like this really intense feeling of overwhelm and fear. And that's resistance. And that's not when you should give up. That's when you should keep at it. And there are a bunch of strategies you can use. The War of Art is a really great book about resistance. And his approach is kind of like, you know, have this daily practice and to kind of...
Stephen Pressfield, that is, right? Yeah. The author?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And to kind of just push through it. And that's one approach. I use that often. Another approach is to take a look at what's going on underneath there. Like, what are the fears looming beneath the resistance? What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of that people will laugh at you if you put yourself out there, that you'll fail, you know, and really explore that and talk, like, write down, you know, what would you do if this happens? And, you know, another way to do it is to even take things to the extreme. Imagine everything going wrong, all of your worst fears, and to kind of make it this caricature and get to this point where you're like, okay, that's ridiculous, and just, like, laugh at yourself and get over it that way.
Yeah, sometimes easier said than done. You're talking about these big obstacles and resistance. I felt it last year when I was trying to transition from my old website, Enlightened Resource Management, to what's now Value Simple, and this show, Smart and Simple Matters. And I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to talk about this as well. You wrote an article a couple years ago, which was basically a case study about one of your coaching students and how you helped her find this overarching theme for her umbrella business. And the way that you distilled this interaction with this woman down in such this concise and powerful way, at least that's the reason why it's still the most influential article on me. And it was titled, "Can't Settle on a Niche for Your Business? Not a Problem." I'm going to link to it in the show notes because I want other people to leverage it for their benefit like I did for mine. Like I said, I was having such a tough time trying to personally and professionally rebrand from Enlightened Resource Management to this current Value Simple dealio. And you have helped countless people like me, whether it's with a personal brand or whether it's with a professional brand, you know, somebody initially starting with a side hustle business, or a person wanting to become an entrepreneur, or somebody who actually was an entrepreneur like I was at that point in time, you help them not fall into this one true calling trap. And you don't have to pick your one thing and then stick with it come hell or high water. So to unpackage all that, you know, I'd really like everyone listening to know, what advice do you have for somebody who would love nothing better than to someday have their own umbrella business?
I almost want to turn this question around on you, Joel, since you went through this process and you took something really specific and broadened it out and came up with a theme, but I'll answer your question first.
Fair enough.
So it's going to require a lot of introspection and a lot of brainstorming. It's a lot of work to find this overarching theme that brings together many of your passions, but it's worth it, because once you find that thing, it's awesome. You can just go forward and you feel great. And it's this sort of filter and this way of looking at the world where you can like assess different projects and be like, okay, is this in line with my theme, with what I'm about? So in terms of going about finding that overarching theme, the first thing I would say is to make a very long list of everything that you love, everything that you've done, even vague curiosities, stuff that you used to be really passionate about and aren't anymore. Just get it all out on paper. If you aren't sure whether or not to include something, then include it. You just want to get everything down. And then you want to take a look at how things come together. So is there any driving force? You might ask yourself, what about these various interests drew me to them? And see if there are any commonalities there. Another thing you can do is say, could knowledge from one of these areas be useful to an audience related to another interest of mine? That makes me think of, you know, sort of like the nerd fitness is my favorite example, because Steve Kam, right? Like nerds and fitness are two, like those are two areas that don't go together. But that's information. He has a background in both. So he was able to take this information that could really be helpful to these awesome dorks and translate it into their language. Another example is Marketing for Hippies, which is a cool website with a guy who, you know, he has a background in green conscious businesses and he's also got a background in marketing. And those two areas don't usually go together, but he's able to bridge that gap and to bring this knowledge from one area to help people in a totally unrelated field. So that's something you could do. You could take a look at all of your interests and say, okay, how can I pair these up? Like, what if and you'll get some really silly ideas, you know, like, oh, okay, I'll like dance lessons for web designers. Like, no, maybe not. But, you know, you'll come up with a lot of different ideas and maybe something will be really good. Another thing you could do is ask yourself if there's something that really matters to you, you know, sort of like this message that you want to share with the world. And sometimes you know what this is intuitively. Other times you figure it out by looking at your different passions. But if you have a message or a philosophy, that's a really good way to integrate multiple different fields and disciplines as well.
That's not all the process. Those are just mm-hmm. some of the steps in it. And I'm just going to give some folks a warning. I'm not alone in that it's horribly awkward sometimes. You know, it took me about 3 or 4 months to really get a footing for what I wanted to do. And I'm kind of answering your question now, Emily. You mm-hmm. turned it back on me. And initially, I wanted to call my website Heroes Over Chaos. You know, I had this concept in my head like, okay, I want people to feel triumphant, like they're overcoming their organizational challenges and simplifying their life, like they would be a hero over chaos.
I actually remember that. You posted about that in the Putty Tribe.
Yeah, and
I think you've posted about most of your – it's been really cool, I have to say. It's been really cool watching your evolution, because I feel like you brainstormed a lot of this in the Putty Tribe, and a lot of other people got value from that too.
I did. It was really helpful. And fortunately, there were people who convinced me when something wasn't authentic, when something didn't ring true to everybody else, because it's wonderful if you have something that you want to do, but if the world isn't interested in hearing or seeing or watching whatever it is that you need to do, yeah, it might feel great to create something of value to you, but if you're not building the things that are useful to other people and you're not improving other people's lives, at least what I've found is it's not really worth doing. And there's all sorts of things that are awesome and fancy that I would love to talk about, but no one's really going to benefit from that, and so I don't. But it's a struggle, and I'm glad that you're around to help people like me and probably some of the other people who are nodding their heads right now, like saying, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I would love a little bit of help with that.
Thanks. So I'm curious, how did you go from Heroes Over Chaos to Smart and Simple Matters and the show?
Well, this is me. I'm grateful for you being a guest on my show. And normally I don't like to go too deep into my history. You know what? We're going to save that history lesson for some other time. Perhaps I'll write a post about it. But for the people who are interested in my evolution from enlightened resource management to...
But I mean, in terms of finding that theme, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, well, things that I've always loved are personal finance. for two decades. I've loved everything related to personal finance, whether it's credit cards, insurance, taxes, real estate, investing, daily money management, you know, the really unsexy stuff that I talk about, the things that everyone's like, oh God, gotta pay my bills. I love paying my bills. I love automating it so I don't even have to think about paying my bills. And then organizing, not like obsessive compulsive, but I've always had these really strong organizing tendencies, especially in the digital era. And then more recently, minimalism and that huge role that it's played in helping me simplify my life and stripping away all of the needless stuff, the things that I'm not intentional about, and being able to combine them. You know, having this umbrella where I have, as I tell people all the time, I help you simplify, organize, and be money wise. And there's a common thread that flows through all of them, which is helping people with things that they don't necessarily want to think about or take action on, and making it in a way that is not only kind of fun and kind of useful, but making it in a way where they can see the ripple effect, where if they get awesome at rocking daily money management, that is going to help them not need to buy as much. That is going to help them simplify their lives. Mm-hmm. It's going to have less things in their physical environment. It's going to be easier to organize. So showing people the ripple effect of how all these seemingly disparate things are actually tied together and how they eventually make you become a hero over chaos. So that's part of my story. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share
But simplification, would you say is your, if you had to boil it down, your overarching theme into one word?
I can't. I don't have a single word for my overarching theme. I guess that's kind of cool. I mean, when you create something and you can plug in all of these things that don't seem like they make a lot of sense, but you can frame them in a way where like, oh, he's talking about curating and spreadsheets. And that kind of makes sense. It falls.
Well, I definitely think that your site as well as this show feels very cohesive. So that is the goal, right? That's the ultimate goal, so that people like go to the site and they get it, even if there are different blog posts on many different topics. It all fits together.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of fun on the last few minutes and just overall. I want to make sure that I get a chance for you to tell folks where they can learn more about you. But I always like to have a little bit of fun towards the end of the show, too. And I thought of this question knowing you. I'm just a quick one, if you'd like. Which would you rather be? A successful globetrotting singer-songwriter with oodles of free time to pursue your other passions, or a lot of people's go-to person in everything from paleo to, say, all things putty?
I feel like I'm headed more towards B, so but it's hard for me to answer this question because I have that, like, initial multi-potentialite reaction of like, I don't want to like commit to either one of these, you know? but they both sound pretty good, but probably the second one.
All right, don't worry. You're not on the record as making a commitment here. I would like to give you an opportunity though. Is there something that we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
Well, there's the putty tribe. We haven't really talked about that much.
Tell us.
So the putty tribe is an online community. We've got about 200 members, and it's all multi-potentialites from around the world. And it's heavily forum-based, and it's a really active forum. So people are helping each other out with their businesses, their careers, productivity, dealing with relatives who don't understand, that sort of thing. We've also got huddles, which we run, and members also organize them for each other. And like I mentioned earlier, that's, you know, brainstorming in a group, and that really helps you make progress on your various projects. And we do workshops as well. So like one of my ideas was that, you know, we're this community full of people with so many random interests, like we should be teaching each other. And often you'll be curious about something that like the people around you in your real life are like, yeah, I don't really care. But multi-potentialites are so curious that you often end up having this really captivated audience. And so we run these member-led workshops, and we record all of them and keep them in a little section in the Putty Tribe. And we've recently just started collaborating together, and we made a motivational poster, and the next project is going to be a video, and all of that's getting featured on a new site called Putty Labs, which is puttylabs.co.co. So that's the Putty Tribe. Of course, you know, the blog is there for everyone. The Putty Tribe is for people who want to take things a little bit further and really get serious about integrating all their passions into their life. But it's a really fun environment. It's kind of like people are really supportive. It's sort of like a playground for multi-potentialites. So that's one of the things I'm working on that I'm really excited about.
That's cool. And if people want to understand, you know, hopefully everyone has enjoyed it. If they're still listening 50 minutes into it, I got to think that what we've been saying has been resonating. There is a lot of overlap between what I talk about frequently on Smart and Simple Matters, this simplifying, organizing, being money-wise, and being a multi-potentialite, you know, and the collaboration that people experience in the Putty Tribe, and how I owe the fact that people are listening to this right now in terms of the topics that we're talking about and my ability to get awesome people like you on the show, I owe a lot of that to the Putty Tribe. And I'm incredibly grateful to you and to the awesome people who are in there. And if folks want to see the overlap, I wrote a guest post for Emily a few months ago called How You Get the Putty-Like Snowball Effect. I'll link to that in the show notes along with all the other things that Emily has talked about. Where else can we find you online? Anywhere?
So puttylike.com, puttylabs.co, theputtytribe.com, Twitter. I'm on Twitter, Emily Wapnick. I'm on Facebook. I'm around.
You're around. People can find you if they want to find you. Okay. Well, I will be following you around wherever you go. Whatever kind of putty creation it is, I'll be intrigued and happy to support it. I just want to say thanks again for coming on the show today. It's been a treat and a pleasure.
Thanks so much. It was really, really fun.
All right. I hope you enjoyed all that insight from Emily and are starting to think about more and better ways to express your multi-potentiality and smooshing abilities. Now, if you like this episode, be sure to show Emily some love on Twitter at her handle, at Emily Wapnick. That's EmilieWapnick. Also, you can easily find all the resources we spoke about in this episode in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM026. And if you're feeling really inspired to go on with your bad multi-potentialite self, I highly, highly recommend Emily's Renaissance Business resource for that. Now, I can't tell you how many people that I know personally that have purchased Renaissance Business and had that, light bulb, eureka, holy crap moment, and how they stitch together so many passions, interests, and skills into a viable business. And if you'd like to get your hands on that and help me out a little in the process, go to valueofsimple.com/RB. That's RB as in Robert Boy, which is my affiliate link for Emily's Grooviness. And just looking at the main page again right now for Renaissance Business and reading all the success stories reminds me of how many folks like me have leveraged Emily's wisdom and skills to create something that's just awesome and sustainable and full of impact for the people that you're trying to help. So check it out at valueofsimple.com/RB and see if it's a good fit for you. And after you're done showing Emily some love, let me know what's on your mind and how I might help you. Now, you can do that by sending an email to joel@valueofsimple.com in 140 characters or less on Twitter with my handle at Joel Zislavsky, on Google+, which I love, or hey, you know what? Whatever else works for you. I'm just so happy that you listened to this episode. I mean, all you new listeners and friends, and all you oldies but goodies kinds of friends who have been here from the start, I really hope you're encouraged and inspired by me, because I gotta tell you, I am definitely, definitely encouraged and inspired by you. Keep rocking it out there, and it is now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off once again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zislavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.